listening to me, your lovable host, L. Rod, here on The Rod Echols Show.
You want to know what time it is? It's time to bring the rain.
Zinc Media. Feel the power of knowledge.
I got it wrong. It was not $28,000 that I saw that I'm trying to remember, but it was more like $38,000. And we get somebody telling me that there's Cato Institute stuff out there saying that New York State is the equivalent of a little over $38,000. And that was probably the paper I was reading. It was probably a New York paper. And my own brain probably wouldn't accept $38,000. I'm sorry. I just don't. I mean, welfare, the equivalent to $38,000 a year. Do you realize that's like $16 or $17 an hour for a job? But why the hell would you work? And that's evidently, you know, I'm being told by Tom in the chat room, that's the seventh highest. Well, who the hell is getting over $40,000 a year for welfare? What state is that? You know, just make it a little bit more. Give me $50,000 and I'll stop working for you. I mean, I never would do that. But anyway, welcome back, folks. It is I, your lovable host, L. Rod, coming to you live from an undisclosed location somewhere within the great granite state of New Hampshire, where the state motto is live free or die. That's why I would never take government, hand out government money, because I wouldn't be able to live free. They would want me to die, though. That's for damn sure. But I wouldn't be able to live for free as long as I took their money. Here it is on Wednesday, September number 12 in the year of our Lord, 2018. I know this is also, 9-12? So this is the Glenn Beck stuff, not the 9-12. Is that still going? I don't hear much about the 9-12 group anymore, or organization, or whatever they call themselves. It was the Glenn Beck thing. Does anybody hear? I don't hear about them anymore. Did they go away? Were they just a fad? Who knows? Any case, call a number this morning is 603-499-7325. That's 603-499-7325. Want to remind people to be here next week, definitely on Monday, for but it is a big format change in the program. And no, it is... Yes, it's going to positively affect the content. You're going to like it. Well, it's going to confuse some people, but it's the wave of the future. That's just the way it is. And I think it's going to be a big boost, and you're gonna like it. Am I going to stop being me? Well, hell no. Am I going to stop making fun of liberals? Hell no. Am I going to stop calling out leftists? Hell no. In fact, I might even do it more. But but in any case, we do have to get to the second part of our interview with that took place between Agent 0010 and a source named D. So we'll bring on the wonderful Agent 0010. Good morning, Agent.
Good morning. Greetings and salutations to one of all, and it's great to be back on.
Knock on wood, it looks like everything is working well, so we'll just we won't touch anything. We'll just keep it at that for now. Everybody can hear, evidently.
Let's see how long.
Yeah, let's see how long that lasts.
Let's see how long that lasts.
Last week...
Great to be back.
Last week we were talking about Puerto Rico, And now this week we've got another massive hurricane that is bearing down on the Carolina coast, on our east coast. And I'm sure it's going to veer up northward, and we're going to get remnants of that here in New England in about a week or so. But by the way, can I also say that, I don't know what the hell this weather pattern is this year, but I don't like it. We don't seem to get a day of rain. Whenever the rain comes in, it stays for days. And this is day 3.5 that we've got rain. And they originally told us, oh, yeah, it's only going to rain on Monday. Well, Monday ran into Tuesday. Monday it got expanded to Sunday night, ran into Monday, then Tuesday, and in today. And now they're talking about, it could be here tomorrow, too. I thought it was supposed to be 85 and sunny tomorrow. That's what they said on Monday. Any case. So we've got nothing but rain coming. Some people are saying, if this storm stalls, it could be as much as certain places after they get done with all the flooding and all the rain coming down from the mountains, it could be the equivalent of like getting 30 inches. There's going to be some massive flooding if this thing stalls on that part of the country in the East Coast. Now, they've already mobilized in order to try to take care of those types of problems that are going to arise whenever we have a flood. But it isn't going to be the same kind of response that they got down there in Puerto Rico. Now, just to bring people up to speed of what we talked about last week, the groundwork was laid talking about that Puerto Rico has, for the island of its size and its population, instead of having about 4 or 5 power plants, which they properly needed, they only had 2 at the time of that hurricane, and only 1 was fully operational. For an island and a population that needed about 4 or 5 of them, they had 1. Their whole entire infrastructure as far as distributing that power was something that was out of the 1950s and had not been updated. They didn't have the equipment or even the spare parts to repair this plant because the plant itself is like 50 or 60 years old. And they never upgraded, even though that there's been money sent down there to do all these infrastructure upgrades. It looks like very little of it actually got spent on the upgrades. And we also learned that we've got a couple of Puerto Rican politicians that are either under indictment or under investigation for stealing, a total of over $10 million from the public. So, this is not a microcosm, because something similar, people would probably think, well, this can't happen on the mainland. Well, something similar to this happened in New Orleans after Katrina. So is this a pattern that we're starting to see emerge?
To be honest, I don't know. I don't know. Now, the power plants here in the United States, on the mainland of the United States, are predominantly owned by private businesses. And they supply the electricity and so on and so forth, as opposed to the power plant or the 1.25, because I got to say the other one was basically used for spare parts. It's like you buy a hoopty to maintain your running car. That's what they originally did to that second power plant that is no longer operational. But both those power plants are not privately owned industry power plants. Both those power plants are owned by Puerto Rico. That's who owns those power plants. It's not Caribbean Electric or some other made-up company, whatever you want to call a private company. It is owned by the government of Puerto Rico.
Now, might I remind people about this? These are government-owned plants now. They're not owned by private industry. Didn't we have a government official not too long ago that, sort of accidentally let it slip about, this liberal will be all about taking over your country, your companies, and anybody remember that quote from Maxine Waters?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, she did say that. She did let it slip, and then all of a sudden, and this was during a hearing. Mm-hmm. This was during a Senate hearing. It wasn't when she was up there, you know, filibustering, you know, with her bad breath that could probably stun a horse. This is her sitting there in a Senate committee, and she said, when we take over, and she had to stop herself. And I'm like, yeah, too late. Cat's out of the bag. You kind of screwed the pooch on that one now, didn't you, Mad Max?
And that's the way they operate. So we have another storm coming in, you know, category 4 right now. And if it stalls, well, there's, you know, we know what happens. I know when they say, well, if it stalls, it could weaken. Now, throughout my lifetime, hurricane history, whenever a storm stalls out over the water, it only gets stronger. It doesn't weaken. Mm-hmm. So if it stalls out over the Atlantic in those warm waters, it's going to go from a 4 to a 5 pretty damn quick. I'm hoping it doesn't stall. I know there's some people who are saying, yeah, we hope it stalls because then it will weaken. Like, I haven't seen a hurricane stall out over the water like that and weaken. It only gets stronger. And then when it decides to move again, it don't move slow. It just blows through and wastes everything. I mean, do these people – now let's get back to Puerto Rico. Do they really think that the people are that stupid, and are the people that powerless to make change? Or do they even want to make change because they keep electing these same types of people?
Well, currently the former governor of Puerto Rico is no longer the governor of Puerto Rico, and he was there during Hurricane Maria. Now – the Puerto Rican people elected a Republican governor. Now she is running. And thanks to her, and by the way, Puerto Rico's back up on the radar with FEMA because the Puerto Rican governor stepped in, took a look at everything that had happened or had occurred during Maria and turns around and says, you know what? There's something missing here. So the Puerto Rican government called up FEMA and said, hey, and I'm going to tell you exactly what was missing. That blew her mind away. They called up FEMA and they said, yeah, you know what? We need you to come down here, send some representatives so we can set up an emergency headquarters. So during this entire time, Puerto Rico and its politicians, it never dawned on them during all their, you know, natural disasters and all their hurricanes and all their storms to set up an emergency management bunker. Or facility. They've never had an emergency management facility. So now FEMA's going back down to Puerto Rico and they're going to start setting up an emergency management facility for them and how to run it and how to direct it and who goes where and what kind of systems they need for computers and for communications. They didn't even have a proper emergency management communications system. The new Puerto Rican government, a governor, she's stepping in and she's basically saying, oh, we're going to fix this now. And it's going to take baby steps because it's going to be a culture shock of, whoa, wait a minute, a politician's actually getting something done like it was here in the United States. And hopefully and surely they're going to start seeing that these corrupt politicians that are now currently all over the island of Puerto Rico, once you vote them out of power, they have no power over you. But the situation is that right now, during an election, well, they have the power over the people to either strong-arm them, convince them, or bribe them. And in many occasions, it's strong-arming them. But in most occasions, it's bribing for votes.
Yeah, we get that from Democrats all the time.
But like I said, once the people... Oh, yeah. I mean, once they see that, okay, well, this person, once he's not in power, he has no power. She has no power. Well, and it's going to take time. Democrats of that Commonwealth are dirty, dirty fighters.
Yeah, Democrats are dirty all over the place. I mean, just look, Chicago. I mean, Rahm Emanuel is looking at this $500 a month. What do you think that's going to do? One that's going to that's going to keep the blacks in their place. And two, it's going to, hey, he's giving me money. So they're going to keep voting for the next Democrat. I mean, it's insidious stuff. But, okay, so let's get into the second half of this interview with Source D, picking up where we left off last week. Here we go.
And how much of a hindrance was she to the governor of Puerto Rico?
A huge hindrance because, again, she controls the one and only port.
So she's the kingpin of all the gangster mayors in Puerto Rico.
Absolutely, and that's part of the reason she's under indictment. And did you notice, do you see the news?
Hold on for a second. Just to bring people up, that is the mayor of which Puerto Rican city that you're talking about now?
San Juan.
San Juan, and her name is?
Carmen Yulín Soto.
Okay, let's continue.
Story, what was that, about 2 weeks ago, where they found all the shipping containers sitting in a government in a parking lot of a government facility that was full of supplies, food, water, clothing, and it was, somebody was like, oh, I wonder what's those big containers. And I'm sure they probably said FEMA on them. I wonder what's in those big shipping containers. Let's open the door. Oh, hey, look, there's a whole bunch of food. And all of a sudden, nobody knows how they got there and who was supposed to be distributing it. So, I mean, that tells you right there. They had no plan.
Shipping containers just don't materialize out of thin air. That thing must have been sitting there for months.
Oh, since a hurricane. This was stuff that was that came in right at, you know, right, either that was already there or came in right after the hurricane.
So that's been sitting there since the hurricane. Nobody bothered to open it, and nobody bothered to see what's in it to distribute its contents.
Correct. And who told them to put them there? It's not like you just take them and put them in somebody's parking lot with, and the people that own the building go, I wonder what's in those shipping containers. And nobody seemed to know, you know, who authorized them to be put there, who was supposed to be in charge of them, who was supposed to be in charge of distributing the goods inside. And it was things that people needed in those first, 72 hours of, after the hurricane passed.
Sweet Jesus. I'm completely shocked. And I'll say it, disgusted. Because,
absolutely.
I mean, you're supposed to be helping your people. That's why you beg them to elect you. But you know what? You could have been honest. You could have been honest enough and say, hey, why don't you elect me? Because I'm going to be the biggest mafioso or mafia-like figure in Puerto Rico and make me rich. Because that's what I want. I want to be rich. So elect me. But of course, nobody's gonna elect them because that's too honest.
Yeah, they promise the world and deliver nothing.
You know, I mean,
it's very sad. I mean, really think about it. It is truly sad, and that there were people that there were people that died that were, it wasn't direct result of the direct result. When I say the direct result of the hurricane hitting, they didn't die because, they were drowned by the floodwaters of the hurricane or the trees falling on our house. There were people that were perished, during those type of incidents. But then there were, people that later on that were sick, again, you have your elderly population, you have your people that have medical needs that now you don't have fresh water right away to drink, and because those people didn't, a lot of them were poor and couldn't afford to stockpile water and get the goods that they needed to last them long term. And that was the thing. It was, really and truly, it was way more than the 72 hours to say, be prepared to survive 72 hours and then we'll come bring assistance to you. Some instances it was weeks before they were able to get to some of these areas because they were so isolated. And then once, you know, and not knowing where all those areas necessarily are, because, again, the folks that came in are not necessarily familiar with the island and the demographics and where people are located and where those villages are. And, oh, by the way, how do I land my helicopter when you live in the middle of a jungle in mountains? You know, there's not just that there's a helicopter landing zone sitting there that I can bring my helicopter in and land on it. So how do I get the supplies to the people up there? How do I have no communication with them. So how do I know what they need?
This brings up a point. Now, I had to choose a point to really stop the interview as we get to the bottom of the hour break, but this brings up a point. Now, there is a growing movement on the mainland here of so-called, you know, living off the grid or self-sustainability. And this is something that there's even, you know, a plethora of, you know, semi-reality TV shows about this stuff. And it's not just Alaska either. These places are not just in Alaska. They're all over the country. In fact, there's even a real estate program where people are actually, the real estate agent helps people find off-the-grid property all over the country. We're talking, you know, from Montana to Virginia to Texas to New York. So this is people starting to understand that they can't depend on government all the time. There's got to be some sort of source of self-sustainability. And this is also another reason why there's this stuff called these emergency whatever packs for 72 hours. I mean, Sean Hannity used to talk about them. But understandably, those things, you know, per person, those things are expensive. They could be, you know, anywhere from $150 to $300 for 3 days of survival per person. You got a family of four, you're looking at, you know, dropping almost $1,000 just to get started. But these people don't even have anything like that. And when you're talking about bringing in helicopters, now, you don't need an airport, right? You don't need an airport to bring in a helicopter, right, Agent?
Nope, you don't. You need to clear an area clear of, like, trees and power lines.
So how expensive would it be for somebody just to have a couple of chainsaws to go out and clear a landing zone and keep it clear for emergencies? Because they could be used for other than just after a hurricane. It could be used for anything. It could be a medical emergency. They could bring in a helicopter to take people out for medical treatment. It could just be bringing in regular supplies. Why is it that they don't have just a regular, shall we say, heliport? It doesn't even have to be paved.
Hold up. This is what, like anything, there are different degrees and different sizes for certain situations. As far as helicopters are concerned, you can go out into an area, like you said, clear it out with chainsaws and maybe some explosives, make it big enough. The United States military has a helicopter called a Sky Crane. This thing lands on top of a shipping container, hooks onto the shipping container, takes off carrying the shipping container. You go into an area, the bird lands on the ground, detaches the shipping container, then takes off. Shipping container stays in that area with the food and water needed for that area. Depending on the amount of people, you can bring in 2, 3, 4 shipping containers and take care of the people in that area for 2 weeks.
It's not an expensive or complicated proposition. You really just have to make a clearing on a relatively flat parcel of land. It's not very huge.
Exactly.
And you got what you need. But this is not what they did in Puerto Rico.
No, it's not. Let me clear something up right now. When he was talking about the shipping container sitting in a parking lot, okay, this was not a couple of weeks after the hurricane. This interview took place three, 4 weeks ago. So those shipping containers were sitting there for a year. And nobody went to go take a look. Months. When he said 2 weeks ago. This was a couple of weeks ago when he said this. So those containers were sitting there for close to a year.
Unbelievable. Don't go anywhere, folks. We'll be back and continue.
I'm not Rod Eccles, and I approve this message.
We've all heard of male enhancement, but now there's an expert on true male enhancement in the areas that really count. In Herb Ellis's book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, you'll find answers to questions like, why doesn't she want to have sex? A quick start, quick results workout guide, plus what you can do as a side hustle to make money now. With all the great tips in this book, every man can benefit. Get the book, Husband 2.0, Real Male Enhancement, on Amazon.com.
It started with a knock, but it wouldn't end there. What happens in the story next, many wouldn't understand, and most wouldn't believe. 5+2=Perfection by Samuel Rosett Jr. is a must-read. The scriptures within are reminders of the ancient past, and yet intriguingly infuses with texts which stand on the edge of the stage of relevancy. Available online at Westbow Press, Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, and SamuelRosettJr.com.
This holiday season, help Soldiers for Stockings improve the morale and welfare of members of our armed forces deployed overseas. Now through November 20th, there is so much work to be done, and you can help in many ways. Download the stocking pattern from stockingsforsoldiers.org and start sewing today. Volunteer to help decorate and assemble stockings. Donate Christmas candies, snacks, nuts, chips, drink mixes, DVDs, books, magazines, lip balm, toiletries, and other items needed to fill the stockings. Or help make packets of snowman soup, hot chocolate, to send along with the stockings. For more information, patterns, and a list of items needed, visit stockingsforsoldiers.org. This holiday season, help send our troops a touch of home. For many, it's all they will receive. All stockings need to be completed by November 20th. So get started today at stockingsforsoldiers.org. That's stockingsforsoldiers.org. Stockings for Soldiers, sending stockings filled with joy to our soldiers in harm's way for the 9th consecutive year.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-471-9742. That's 800-471-9742. Again, 800-471-9742.
Do you need a car? Been shopping only to be turned down because of bad credit, low credit, no credit, bankruptcy, or divorce? Guess what? Today's your lucky day, because now you can buy a car, truck, or SUV, just about any vehicle. It's true. Bad credit? Doesn't matter. No credit? Doesn't matter. Bankruptcy or divorce? It just doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, your job is your ticket to your new vehicle. We're Auto Credit Express, and we've helped thousands of people just like you. Antonio H. told us, great company, got me connected, and the day I went in, I drove off in the car I wanted. 100% worth your time. Need a car? Get started now and drive off as early as today. Just go to 7ignoremyscore.com right now. That's www.7ignoremyscore.com. Auto financing the easy way. 7ignoremyscore.com. Get started today. Auto financing the easy way.
Welcome back. See, he told you wouldn't go anywhere very long. We never, well, I guess we do. We take a 21-hour break, but that is only a couple-minute break. And we are back, and of course, The call-in number is still the same, hasn't changed, 603-499-7325. Although we won't be taking calls during the report because it's an interview, and obviously you can't ask questions of a person who's being interviewed that's recorded because he's not here. Yet, I know some people are saying, well, that's duh. Well, you know, there are some people who listen who don't get that. You know, to understand when I said early in the first hour, a person claiming that they couldn't call in because they didn't have a number, they were responding to a gab or a tweet that I had put out there, and the phone number was listed in the tweet. Yeah, and then I'm not kidding, and they said, well, you don't have a number for me to call in. Well, I guess you didn't read the second or third sentence then, because there, I don't even know, even if you didn't read it, how do you miss it? I mean, obviously, you know the difference just by your eyes taking the whole thing. Maybe you don't comprehend the whole thing at once, but your eyes take it in, and you can definitely tell that there are numbers there. It wasn't a long-ass tweet. They didn't have to scroll down to see it. I can understand if they had to scroll through the tweet to see something, but they didn't have to do that. So, but you don't have a number. Well, if you can't see what that is in front of you, either you really do have tunnel vision, you can only see one line at a time, or you're just being a total, shall I say it? I know this is supposed to be a safe for work program. Sometimes, you know, I usually go off the rails a little bit and it's not very safe, which is why I can't be on radio. I know a lot of people are asking, why aren't you on radio? Because sometimes the passion overwhelms me and I slip into, what is it, NSFW mode. Not often, but enough for, if this is on a radio, I'm sure that radio station would get fined. so we decided that maybe that wouldn't be the best idea. Now, I understand it's different for satellite and for even cable radio. You know, the radio that's on your television, believe it or not. There are different rules, but over the air, there's still these antiquated rules. That's our wonderful government doing this kind of crap to us, you know, trying to limit our freedoms in some way. First of all, in some areas of this, in the United States, I know I have to bring this up because I have to remind people, in the United States of America, it is illegal in some municipal districts for you to have a vegetable garden on your property. Now, some specify that you can't have it on your front lawn. Now, which is really kind of dumb because there are all kinds of flowering, shall we say, plants that are edible. You can literally grow a salad on your front lawn with nothing but, you know, floral stuff. You don't have to have zucchini in your front lawn. So it's kind of dumb to say, well, you can't grow vegetables in your front lawn. But they limit people from doing that because they want to limit self-sustainability. And there are other districts where you have to be hooked up to, you know, city or town services like water, electric, sewer. Even, and there are some places where they're coming through and, you know, people have perfectly functioning. There isn't any real so-called, you know, environmental impact of having a septic system. But they're coming through, putting in a sewer line, saying people have to attach to the sewer line and pay the sewer fees because they built this new sewer plant and they got to get people to pay for it. So people who didn't have to pay for it before, now all of a sudden got to pay for it. But if you want to put up, you know, solar panels or something on your house and you use enough electricity where you can just take the electrical wires and say bye-bye, no, you can't do that in most jurisdictions in this country. You have to be attached to the grid, and you have to pay that stupid monthly fee for just being attached. Even if you don't use a drop of electricity, a volt of electricity, you got to pay for it. Same with water. They're coming in a lot of places. Well, we're modernizing, so we're bringing centralized water distribution, so no more wells. Well, I want to keep my well. No, you can't keep your well. And in some states, it's illegal to collect rainwater off of your roof. You can't collect it and store it. I mean, if they catch you, it's a huge fine. And what is it? Is it in Oregon where if you get caught, it could even result in jail time? You can't even collect rainwater. So our own government is trying to limit our own ability to be self-sustaining. So is it any wonder that down in Puerto Rico, the government didn't even bother to build anything to help people? And these people are left on their own, but they're also told, well, you know what? There's nothing here for you. So maybe what they're trying to do, and correct me if I'm wrong, Agent, maybe they're trying to move a lot of these people in these outlying areas into the more populated city areas where they have more control over them.
That might be the case. But then, I mean, it's a simple case that these are individuals that have lived in these areas for generations, and they call that home. I mean, you want to talk about hurricanes and people moving? Okay, fine. You got people right now that are in the path of this Hurricane Florence that refuse to move because that's their home, and they've been there for generations, and they just won't give up. So, I mean, a hurricane didn't move these people, but they're thinking that economic prosperity versus their current economic depression is going to make them move. No, they're used to it. They're very much used to it. They want to eat, they go hunting, or they grow vegetables. If they want, you know, electricity, well, guess what? They'll go into the city and buy a generator, and then they'll go buy the gas as they need it. So to think that forcing these people out of the mountain areas, no. I mean, you got people in the city that want to live in Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, because of the beauty, the pristine conditions, and the peace. That's what these people enjoy, peace. But that doesn't mean that they can't have accessibility to what they need in order for them to continue living there, such as electrical lines not far from where they're living, or somebody coming along and saying, oh, okay, well, you have a choice. We can bring the electrical lines to you and you pay the bill, or you just continue doing what you do. Well, because they're impoverished, of course they're not going to want the electric bill, but the comfort of knowing that it's there when they want it is very reassuring. So let's not get things twisted. People in the United States are constantly wanting to go where it's peaceful and quiet. Same thing with Puerto Ricans, and they're not going to give up their home, their generational home, just because of a hurricane, because people in the United States don't do it either.
So we have the technology. So what is the problem with diversifying their power generation system and putting smaller plants in these outlying areas? Now, we know they're not very expensive to make and build or maintain or run. And they could even be run off of, you know, because here in New Hampshire, they're talking about building, I think, three new power plants that are run off of renewable energy, which is wood. So there's plenty of forest in Puerto Rico that can be well managed, where it could be a renewable energy source for them. So why not utilize that technology?
Because we also have to take a look at environmental impacts. And I'm sorry, but wood eventually runs out. I mean, especially on an island. I mean, Easter Island, perfect example. I mean, they kept chopping trees down just so they can build these statues and use the wood for burning and for wheels, but they never considered the environmental impact.
But they didn't plant any more trees. Now, they've developed trees that grow fast. And they're specifically, it's kind of like bamboo. They were developed specifically to grow fast to use as a renewable energy resource. And that's what they're talking about using in New Hampshire, because they're, New Hampshire is more heavily forested now than it was 100 years ago. And
there's a problem with that.
What?
Again, leads back to environmental impact. In order for those trees to be planted and for those trees to grow, you have to chop down other trees. And there are certain species of animals that just don't go along and attach themselves to any old tree. I mean, you know what? I'm going to sound like such a monumental tree-hugging nerd right now, but I don't give a rat's fuzzy butt. The monarch butterfly. The monarch butterfly flies from as far north as Canada. Yep. It migrates all the way south to Mexico. And once it reaches a certain area of Mexico, there is one certain particular tree that these monarch butterflies attach themselves to in the rainforest of Mexico. And they hibernate for weeks. And it's no other tree. There's no other tree they have selected. This one tree. And if those trees are gone, the monarch butterfly is gone, which is part of the ecosystem or the ecological balance of the planet, especially in North America. So not all animals go to all trees. So environmental impact reports must be conducted. They must investigate the fauna. They have to investigate, you know, the animals of the area, insects, mammals. They have to make sure that the impact to the environment is between minimal to zero. And that takes time.
Takes time. And again, Puerto Rico is an island, so it has very little land space to, it's at a premium. I get that part. Point well taken. Let's get back to the interview and finish this off.
So, I mean, what you're basically describing, okay, this whole thing with the little fiefdoms and the little like gangster figureheads that are in charge of each fiefdom, the governor is basically unable to do anything to help these people because these municipalities or the heads of these municipalities are telling him, oh, no, 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 1991, remember, we signed it, you can't do it. Something that was meant to help the people was used as an instrument to hurt the people and make the selected ones become rich or very comfortable. So,
oh, absolutely.
So now it almost sounds like the former Soviet Union.
Wow, that's a great analogy.
Because the Soviet Union was very much like that. You had bosses that would go to the Politburo and say, oh yeah, everything is great in my part of Russia. Then they'd go back and just basically starve and whip the people and get what they want and line their own pockets and then go back to the Politburo and say, eh, everything's taken care of. It's good to go. Don't worry about it. I got it. That's basically what the Soviet Union, the politicians of the Soviet Union were like, the Politburo. Wow. Now,
and Russia itself, hey, you know what? That's what the central government was. The Russian people, they didn't suffer so much. But all those other countries, they tended to suffer a bit more.
Yeah, like the Ukraine. Well, Ukraine really wasn't part of the Soviet Union, but it was influenced. It fell under the Soviet influence. Right. But yeah. All right. Now, in your honest opinion, let's say it wasn't President Trump. If, let's say, it happened during the Obama administration, the mess that's in Puerto Rico, would it be fair to blame President Obama?
You know, you really can't blame the president. I mean, it's really and truly, it goes down to the, you know, it's, again, we always talk about states' rights and territorial rights. So, I mean, really and truly, I mean, FEMA itself and the response that FEMA did, you know, from the time, the last couple of administrations, you know, the last administration, the current administration, FEMA's response and the way they do business is vastly improved from the way they did business during, say, you know, Katrina. And even Katrina wasn't bad. It was just that things, you know, happened. I mean, if you look at Katrina, Mississippi was damaged from the Louisiana line to the Alabama line and three quarters of the way up the state. It was still a Category 3 hurricane when it was about two-thirds of the way up the state of Mississippi. You know, so, I mean, it was totally devastated. but you didn't see the news cameras in Mississippi and people going, oh my God, I'm sleeping in the Superdome. No, they opened up their shelters. They implemented their plans. They did the things that they were supposed to do. They activated the National Guard 72 hours prior. They reported to Camp Shelby. They had their orders. Highway 49, major route that runs north-south from through the state. We want you to open up Highway 49 from Camp Shelby, which is about 48 miles, 50 miles north of the coast, all the way down to the coast. The northbound lanes and the southbound lanes cut both sides open. Had their civil engineer, their combat engineers clearing the roads. They cleared the roads. They got to the coast. They reported to their location where they were designated to report to. And they got follow-on assignments to, okay, we need some of you guys to go here and clean, start clearing debris. We need other people to go here and start doing this thing. You didn't see that in Louisiana. It wasn't until, after the hurricane hit, which, really and truly, it was the hurricane forced the water up the Pearl River into Lake Pontchartrain. And then when the storm moved further north, the wind shifted out of the northeast, pushed the water over top of the levees, the excess water that was in Lake Pontchartrain over top of the levees, and caused the levees to erode by being overwashed. And when the levee failed, which again, that was local politicians refused to upgrade the levees to where they should have been, and there were people that were under investigation at that time in Louisiana for millions of dollars that were gone missing, that were supposed to be spent on upgrading the levee system. But it was I call that a post-hurricane event, because it happened after the hurricane made landfall and after it moved inland. That New Orleans, it was a day or so after the initial impact on the Gulf Coast that the levees failed and New Orleans started to flood. And even then, it was 48 hours prior to the hurricane hitting, the governor of Mississippi hadn't heard anything from the governor of Louisiana. So he got on the conference call and basically said, when do you want us to turn interstate directional? So that means that the east and westbound lanes of I-10 were all going eastbound to get people to be able to evacuate out of New Orleans and get away from there and move up, up through over into Alabama, Florida, or wherever they wanted to go. And the governor kind of hemmed and hawed and said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just do it 12 hours prior and leave it, just leave it for 12 hours until a storm hits. And the governor of Mississippi said, you know what, that's not going to be long enough. We can't move enough people in 12 hours. He said, how about 24 hours and we'll leave it directional until a storm hits. But I mean, that's the kind of things that, when you don't have a plan, you don't implement your plan. And it was infighting between the governor of Louisiana and the mayor of New Orleans. And similar, you saw that same, very, similar, I mean, yeah, yep. Absolutely. Almost, yeah. I mean, you just pretty much cross out Louisiana right in Puerto Rico. And you kind of see some of the large similarities there. I bet if you go down there right now and you started talking to them, I'm betting right now Louisiana, yeah, probably don't have any plans, really, really big plans in place for what they'll do. They've got some. They've improved some, probably. But in the overall, nowhere near as comprehensive as Mississippi or Florida.
So one of the major stumbling blocks in order to get Puerto Rico fixed is they have to get rid of that 1991 legislation. True or false?
That will probably be a good fix.
And then the governor will be able to actually help the people of Puerto Rico.
Absolutely.
Something, like I said before, something that was meant to actually give power to these municipalities in order for them to help their own people, they just basically use it as a piggy bank, a money-making system.
Yeah, pretty much for themselves.
Now,
like most of the other places in the Caribbean.
Now, in order for... Okay, step one, they got to get rid of this 1991 plan. Now, what are the plans currently in order to repair the power plants or the infrastructure of Puerto Rico?
Well, they got the one power plant back up and running. I'm not exactly sure what's going to happen with the second plant, whether they're going to end up completely redoing it, building another power plant. It's still a struggle getting all the, not only the main big transmission lines that have gone in, but now think about it. You got to run that spider web of all the smaller transmission lines to the local people, to where they got to go. You think about an island the size of Puerto Rico, and how many thousands of lines you have to run. I mean, it's not something that's done overnight. When they said the oil was going to take, 8 months, everybody was like, "Oh my God!" That was a best guess, because really nobody's ever done that where they had to run, completely rebuild the whole power grid from the ground up in an area that is inhospitable to being able to do it when you got to run through all over top and around the mountains and. And things like that.
I mean, honestly, I'm not an engineer, and I'm not by any means an electrical engineer, but I think it'd be easier just to build 4 power plants up in the mountains, level the mountain or a mountain, and just spiderweb the electrical lines in all directions going from 4 power plants located central of the island. But like I said, the geography and everything else, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a civil engineer. I'm not an electrical engineer. I'm not a train engineer. I'm not even a freaking conductor on an Amtrak train. So as far as my knowledge or expertise on this, it's basically zero. But it sounds good, but hey, you know what? A lot of things sound good in life, but trying to do them is a damn nightmare.
Yeah, and it all comes down to who's going to pay for it. And then it takes, those things aren't done overnight. Because, again, we have, you have to do the environmental impact analysis and studies.
I forgot about that.
So that takes years.
I forgot about
that. And then, again, you got that pristine rainforest. So there's air, and there's nobody lives really in the rainforest. So that area on the eastern central part of the country, you're not going to be able to run lines through there or around there. So, you got to run your major transmission lines around the coastal region and then, spider web it up into the mountains and to the areas that need it. It would make sense to have 4 power plants, one kind of on the north, one kind of northeastern, one south, northwestern, one southwestern, one down on the southeastern end. Or somewhere in that in general region and cut down and make so that if one goes down, another one can pick up the load and continue to operate. If 2 go down, if you got 4, it's always one of these things when we're in the military working with generators. And, you say if you got 1 generator, you got none.
Yeah.
If you got 2 generators, you got 1.
Yep.
And because inevitably when you need it, it's going to fail.
Wow. So basically, okay, let's summarize this whole thing, and I'll summarize it, and you cut me off when I'm wrong. Okay.
Alrighty.
All right. So the infrastructure is dilapidated before the hurricane. It was a total disgrace and total shambles, and basically built just post World War II. The roads around the tourist areas or around the coast, nice roads. They got tons of potholes, but at least they're roads. Everything else is basically a dirt road, which means it's susceptible to mudslides. It's susceptible to being just completely overgrown. It's susceptible to just turning into pure mud, making it impossible for vehicles to get through. The politicians of Puerto Rico are basically a bunch of gangsters. Even though the governor tries his very hardest, the governor really doesn't have any power because the municipalities, which are 78 of them, overrule the governor every damn time because they don't want to lose power or control. The mayor of Puerto Rico, well, she was the kingpin mayor of all of them because she had the airport and the ports, and she could basically destroy a municipality all by herself by simply saying, yeah, we'll send them food later. We'll send them supplies later and never send them the stuff. Am I wrong so far?
No, not so far. You're right on point.
Wow. And one thing we have concluded, no matter who was the president, no matter if it was President Trump, President Obama, it could have been President Carter. Hell, it could have been President Jesus Christ himself sent down by the Holy Father to fix things up. It doesn't matter. It's none of their fault. No, irrelevant of political of the president, the politicians of Puerto Rico are solely to blame for everything that's happened there and their interference in FEMA trying to get the job done.
We're going to stop it right there for now to take the top of the hour break. But it's not done, folks. You're going to want to hang around. We still got a few more minutes, and the last few minutes of the interview are you don't want to miss those either. So we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Rod Eccles Show. Let truth be told.
As a mother, you don't want